Otto made up his mind that he'd show them. If he hurried fast enough, he could keep up. Before noon, he had caught up with Royal and had to wait while a fleece was tied. So he said, "You see, I can keep up with you."
"Oh, no, you can't," said John. "We'll beat you. We'll beat through before you are. Wait and see."
Then they all laughed at Almenzo. They were laughing when they heard the dinner horn. Father and John finished the sheep they were shearing and went to the house. Royal tied the last fleece and left it, and Almenzo still had to carry it upstairs. Now he understood what they meant, but he thought, "I won't let them beat me." He found a short rope and tied it around the neck of a sheep that wasn't sheared. He led the sheep to the stairs, and then step by step he tugged and boosted her upward. She bleated all the way, but he got her into the loft. He tied her near the fleeces and gave her some hay to keep her quiet. Then he went to dinner. All that afternoon, Lazy John and Royal kept telling him to hurry or they'd beat him. Almenzo answered, "No, you won't. I can keep up with you." Then they laughed at him. He snatched up every fleece as soon as Royal tied it and hurried upstairs and ran down again. They laughed to see him hurrying, and they kept saying,
"Oh, no, you won't beat us. We'll be through first."
Just before chore time, Father and John raced to shear the last two sheep. Father beat. Almenzo ran with the fleece and was back before the last one was ready. Royal tied it, and then he said,
"We're all through, Almenzo. We beat you. We beat you."
Royal and John burst into a great roar of laughter, and even Father laughed. Then Almenzo said,
"No, you haven't beat me. I've got a fleece upstairs that you haven't sheared yet."
They stopped laughing, surprised. At that very minute, the sheep in the loft, hearing all the other sheep bled out to pasture, cried, "Bah!" Almenzo shouted,
"There's the fleece. I've got it upstairs, and you haven't sheared it yet. I beat you! I beat you!"
John and Royal looked so funny that he couldn't stop laughing. Father roared with laughter.
"The joke's on you, John," Father shouted. "He laughs best who laughs last."
Cold snap. That was a cold late spring. The dawns were chilly, and at noon the sunlight was cool. The trees unfolded their leaves slowly. The peas and beans, the carrots and corn stood waiting for warmth and did not grow. When the rush of spring's work was over, Almenzo had to go to school again. Only small children went to the spring term of school, and he wished he were old enough to stay home. He didn't like to sit and study a book when there were so many interesting things to do. Father hauled the fleeces to the carding machine in Malone and brought home the soft, long rolls of wool, combed out, straight and fine. Mother didn't card her own wool anymore, since there was a machine that did it on shares. But she dyed it. Alice and Eliza Jane were gathering roots and barks in the woods, and Royal was building huge bonfires in the yard. They boiled the roots and the bark in big cauldrons over the fires, and they dipped the long skeins of wool thread that Mother had spun and lifted them out on sticks all colored brown and red and blue. When Almenzo went home from school, the clotheslines were hanging full of colored skeins. Mother was making soft soap, too. All the winter's ashes had been saved in a barrel. Now water was poured over them, and lye was dripping out of a little hole in the bottom of the barrel. Mother measured the lye into a cauldron and added pork rinds and all the waste pork fat and beef fat that she had been saving all winter. The cauldron boiled, and the lye and the fat made soap. Almenzo could have kept the bonfires burning. He could have dipped the brown, slimy soap out of the cauldron and filled the tubs with it. But he had to go back to school. He watched the moon anxiously, for in the dark of the moon in May, he could stay out of school and plant pumpkins. Then in the chill, early morning, he tied a pouch full of pumpkin seeds around his waist and went to the cornfield. All the dark field had a thin green veil of weeds over it now. The small blades of corn were not growing well because of the cold. At every second hill of corn, in every second row, Almanzo knelt down and took a thin, flat pumpkin seed between his thumb and finger. He pushed the seed, sharp point down, into the ground. It was chill work at first, but pretty soon the sun was higher. The air and the earth smelled good, and it was fun to poke his finger and thumb into the soft soil and leave the seed there to grow. Day after day he worked, till all the pumpkins were planted, and then he begged to hoe and thin the carrots. He hoed all the weeds away from the long rows, and he pulled the little feathery carrot tops till those that were left stood 2 inches apart. He didn't hurry at all. No one had ever taken such pains with carrots as he did, because he didn't want to go back to school. He made the work last till there were only 3 more days of school. Then the spring term ended, and he could work all summer. First he helped hoe the cornfield. Father plowed between the rows, and Royal and Almanzo with hoes killed every weed that was left and hoed around each hill of corn. Slash, slash went the hoes all day, stirring the earth around the young shoots of corn and the first 2 flat leaves of the pumpkins. 2 acres of corn Almanzo hoed, and then he hoed 2 acres of potatoes. That finished the hoeing for a while, and now it was strawberry time. Wild strawberries were few that year, and late, because frost had killed the first blossoms. Almanzo had to go far through the woods to fill his pail full of small, sweet, fragrant berries. When he found them clustered under their green leaves, he couldn't help eating some. He snipped off the green twigs of wintergreen and ate them, too. And he nibbled with his teeth the sweet, sour wood sorrel stems right up to their frail lavender blossoms. He stopped to shy stones at the frisking squirrels, and he left his pail on the banks of streams and went wading, chasing the minnows. But he never came home till his pail was full. Then there were strawberries and cream for supper, and next day Mother would make strawberry preserves. "I never saw corn grow so slowly," Father worried. He plowed the field again, and again Almanzo helped Royal to hoe the corn, but the little shoots stood still. On the 1st of July, they were only 4 inches high. They seemed to feel that danger threatened them and to be afraid to grow. It was 3 days to Independence Day, the 4th day of July. Then it was 2 days, then it was 1 day, and that night Almanzo had to take a bath, though it wasn't Saturday. Next morning, they were all going to the celebration in Malone. Almanzo could hardly wait till morning. There would be a band and speeches, and the brass cannon would be fired. The air was still and cold that night, and the stars had a wintry look. After supper, Father went to the barns again. He shut the doors and little wooden windows of the horses' stalls, and he put the ewes with lambs into the fold. When he came in, Mother asked if it was any warmer. Father shook his head. "I do believe it's going to freeze," he said. "Pshaw, surely not," Mother replied, but she looked worried. Sometime in the night Almanzo felt cold, but he was too sleepy to do anything about it. Then he heard Mother calling, "Royal? Almanzo?" He was too sleepy to open his eyes. "Boys, get up, hurry," Mother called. "The corn's frozen." He tumbled out of bed and pulled on his trousers. He couldn't keep his eyes open. His hands were clumsy, and big yawns almost dislocated his jaw. He staggered downstairs behind Royal. Mother and Eliza Jane and Alice were putting on their hoods and shawls. The kitchen was cold. The fire had not been lighted. Outdoors, everything looked strange. The grass was white with frost, and a cold green streak was in the eastern sky, but the air was dark. Father hitched Bess and Beauty to the wagon. Royal pumped the watering trough full. Almanzo helped Mother and the girls bring tubs and pails, and Father set barrels in the wagon. They filled the tubs and barrels full of water, and then they walked behind the wagon to the cornfield. All the corn was frozen. The little leaves were stiff and broke if you touched them. Only cold water would save the life of the corn. Every hill must be watered before the sunshine touched it, or the little plants would die. There would be no corn crop that year. The wagon stopped at the edge of the field. Father and Mother and Royal and Eliza Jane and Alice and Almanzo filled their pails with water, and they all went to work as fast as they could. Almanzo tried to hurry, but the pail was heavy and his legs were short. His wet fingers were cold, and the water slopped against his legs, and he was terribly sleepy. He stumbled along the rows, and at every hill of corn, he poured a little water over the frozen leaves. The field seemed enormous. There were thousands and thousands of hills of corn. Almanzo began to be hungry, but he couldn't stop to complain. He must hurry, hurry, hurry to save the corn. The green in the east turned pink. Every moment the light brightened. At first the dark had been like a mist over the endless field. Now Almanzo could see the end of the long rows. He tried to work faster. In an instant the earth turned from black to gray. The sun was coming to kill the corn. Almanzo ran to fill his pail. He ran back. He ran down the rows, splashing water on the hills of corn. His shoulders ached and his arm ached, and there was a pain in his side. The soft earth hung onto his feet. He was terribly hungry, but every splash of water saved a hill of corn. In the gray light, the corn had faint shadows now. All at once, pale sunshine came over the field. "Keep on!" Father shouted. So they all kept on. They didn't stop. But in a little while, Father gave up. "No use," he called. Nothing would save the corn after the sunshine touched it. Almanzo set down his pail and straightened up against the ache in his back. All the others stood and looked, too, and did not say anything. They had watered almost 3 acres. A quarter of an acre had not been watered. It was lost. Almanzo trudged back to the wagon and climbed in. Father said, "Let's be thankful we saved most of it." They rode sleepily down to the barns. Almanzo was not quite awake yet, and he was tired and cold and hungry. His hands were clumsy doing the chores. But most of the corn was saved. Independence Day. Almanzo was eating breakfast before he remembered that this was the 4th of July. He felt more cheerful. It was like Sunday morning. After breakfast, he scrubbed his face with soft soap till it shone, and he parted his wet hair and combed it sleekly down. He put on his sheep's gray trousers and his shirt of French calico and his vest and his short round coat. Mother had made his new suit in the new style. The coat fastened at the throat with a little flap of cloth. Then the two sides slanted back to show his vest, and they rounded off over his trousers pockets. He put on his round straw hat, which Mother had made of braided oat straws, and he was all dressed up for Independence Day. He felt very fine. Father's shining horses were hitched to the shining red-wheeled buggy, and they all drove away in the cool sunshine. All the country had a holiday air. Nobody was working in the fields, and along the road the people in their Sunday clothes were driving to town. Father's swift horses passed them all. They passed by wagons and carts and buggies. They passed gray horses and black horses and dappled gray horses. Almanzo waved his hat whenever he sailed past anyone he knew, and he would have been perfectly happy if only he had been driving that swift, beautiful team. At the church sheds in Malone, he helped Father unhitch. Mother and the girls and Royal hurried away, but Almanzo would rather help with the horses than do anything else. He couldn't drive them, but he could tie their halters and buckle on their blankets and stroke their soft noses and give them hay. Then he went out with Father and they walked on the crowded sidewalks. All the stores were closed, but ladies and gentlemen were walking up and down and talking.
Ruffled little girls carried parasols, and all the boys were dressed up like Almanzo. Flags were everywhere, and in the square, the band was playing Yankee Doodle. The fifes tooted, and the flute shrilled, and the drums came in with rub-a-dub-dub. Yankee Doodle went to town, riding on a pony. He stuck a feather in his hat and called it macaroni. Even grown-ups had to keep time to it. And there, in the corner of the square, were the two brass cannons. The square was not really square. The railroad made it three-cornered. But everybody called it the square anyway. It was fenced, and grass grew there. Benches stood in rows on the grass, and people were filing between the benches and sitting down as they did in church. Almanzo went with Father to one of the best front seats. All the important men stopped to shake hands with Father. The crowd kept coming till all the seats were full, and still there were people outside the fence. The band stopped playing, and the minister prayed. Then the band tuned up again, and everybody rose. Men and boys took off their hats. The band played, and everybody sang. Oh, say, can you see, by the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming. From the top of the flagpole, up against the blue sky, the stars and stripes were fluttering. Everybody looked at the American flag, and Almanzo sang with all his might. Then everyone sat down, and a congressman stood up on a platform. Slowly and solemnly, he read the Declaration of Independence. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Almanzo felt solemn and very proud. Then two men made long political speeches. One believed in high tariffs, and one believed in free trade. All the grown-ups listened hard, but Almanzo did not understand the speeches very well, and he began to be hungry. He was glad when the band played again. The music was so gay. The bandsmen in their blue and red and their brass buttons tootled merrily, and the fat drummer beat rat-a-tat-tat on the drum. All the flags were fluttering, and everybody was happy because they were free and independent, and this was Independence Day, and it was time to eat dinner. Almanzo helped Father feed the horses while Mother and the girls spread the picnic lunch on the grass in the churchyard. Many others were picnicking there, too, and after he had eaten all he could, Almanzo went back to the square. There was a lemonade stand by the hitching posts. A man sold pink lemonade, a nickel a glass, and a crowd of the town boys were standing around him. Cousin Frank was there. Almanzo had a drink at the town pump, but Frank said he was going to buy lemonade. He had a nickel. He walked up to the stand and bought a glass of the pink lemonade and drank it slowly. He smacked his lips and rubbed his stomach and said, Why don't you buy some? Where'd you get the nickel? Almanzo asked. He had never had a nickel. Father gave him a penny every Sunday to put in the collection box in church. He had never had any other money.
My father gave it to me, Frank bragged. My father gives me a nickel every time I ask him.
Well, so would my father if I asked him, said Almanzo.
Well, why don't you ask him?
Frank did not believe that Father would give Almanzo a nickel. Almanzo did not know whether Father would or not.
Because I don't want to, he said.
He wouldn't give you a nickel, Frank said.
He would too.
I dare you to ask him, Frank said.
The other boys were listening. Almanzo put his hands in his pockets and said,
I'd just as lief ask him if I wanted to.
Yeah, you're scared, Frank jeered. Double dare! Double dare! Father was a little way down the street talking to Mr. Paddock, the wagon maker. Almanzo walked slowly toward them. He was faint-hearted, but he had to go. The nearer he got to Father, the more he dreaded asking for a nickel. He had never before thought of doing such a thing. He was sure Father would not give it to him. He waited till Father stopped talking and looked at him.
What is it, son? Father asked.
Almanzo was scared.
Father, he said.
Well, son?
Father, Almanzo said, would you give me a nickel?
He stood there while Father and Mr. Paddock looked at him, and he wished he could get away. Finally, Father asked,
what for?
Almanzo looked down at his moccasins and muttered, Frank had a nickel. He bought pink lemonade.
Well, Father said slowly, if Frank treated you, it's only right you should treat him.
Father put his hand in his pocket, then he stopped and asked, did Frank treat you to lemonade?
Almanzo wanted so badly to get the nickel that he nodded. Then he squirmed and said,
no, Father.
Father looked at him a long time. Then he took out his wallet and opened it, and slowly he took out a round, big silver half dollar. He asked, Almanzo, do you know what this is?
A half dollar, Almanzo answered.
Yes, but do you know what a half dollar is?
Almanzo didn't know if it was anything but a half dollar.
It's work, son, Father said. That's what money is. It's hard work.
Mr. Paddock chuckled.
The boy's too young, Wilder, he said. You can't make a youngster understand that.
Almanzo's smarter than you think, said Father. Almanzo didn't understand at all. He wished he could get away, but Mr. Paddock was looking at Father just as Frank looked at Almanzo when he double-dared him, and Father had said that Almanzo was smart, so Almanzo tried to look like a smart boy. Father asked,
you know how to raise potatoes, Almanzo?
Yes, Almanzo said.
Say you have a seed potato in the spring. What do you do with it?
You cut it up, Almanzo said.
Go on, son.
Then you harrow. First you manure the field and plow it. Then you harrow and mark the ground, and plant the potatoes and plow them and hoe them. You plow and hoe them twice.
That's right, son. And then?
Then you dig them and put them down cellar.
Yes. Then you pick them over all winter. You throw out all the little ones and the rotten ones. Come spring, you load them up and haul them here to Malone, and you sell them. And if you get a good price, son, how much do you get to show for all that work? How much do you get for half a bushel of potatoes?
Half a dollar, Almanzo said.
Yes, said Father. That's what's in this half dollar, Almanzo. The work that raised half a bushel of potatoes is in it.
Almanzo looked at the round piece of money that Father held up. It looked small compared with all that work.
You can have it, Almanzo, Father said.
Almanzo could hardly believe his ears. Father gave him the heavy half dollar.
It's yours, said Father. You could buy a sucking pig with it if you want to. You could raise it, and it would raise a litter of pigs worth $4 or $5 apiece. Or you can trade that half dollar for lemonade and drink it up. You do as you want. It's your money.
Almanzo forgot to say thank you. He held the half dollar a minute, then he put his hand in his pocket and went back to the boys by the lemonade stand. The man was calling out,
Step this way, step this way, ice cold lemonade, pink lemonade, only 5 cents a glass, only half a dime, ice cold pink lemonade, the 20th part of a dollar.
Frank asked Almanzo, where's the nickel?
He didn't give me a nickel, said Almanzo, and Frank yelled,
yeah, yeah, I told you he wouldn't, I told you so.
He gave me a half dollar, said Almanzo.
The boys wouldn't believe it till he showed them. Then they crowded around, waiting for him to spend it. He showed it to them all and put it back in his pocket.
I'm going to look around, he said, and buy me a good little sucking pig.
The band came marching down the street and they all ran along beside it. The flag was gloriously waving in front. Then came the buglers blowing and the fifers tootlin' and the drummer rattling the drumsticks on the drum. Up the street and down the street went the band with all the boys following it, and then it stopped in the square by the brass cannons. Hundreds of people were there crowding to watch. The cannons sat on their haunches, pointing their long barrels upward. The band kept on playing. Two men kept shouting, stand back, stand back, and other men were pouring black powder into the cannons' muzzles and pushing it down with wads of cloth on long rods. The iron rods had two handles, and two men pushed and pulled on them, driving the black powder down the brass barrels. Then all the boys ran to pull grass and weeds along the railroad tracks. They carried them by armfuls to the cannons, and the men crowded the weeds into the cannons' muzzles and drove them down with the long rods. A bonfire was burning by the railroad tracks, and long iron rods were heating in it. When all the weeds and grass had been packed tight against the powder in the cannons, a man took a little more powder in his hand and carefully filled the two little touch holes in the barrels. Now everybody was shouting, stand back, stand back! Mother took hold of Almanzo's arm and made him come away with her. He told her,
oh, Mother, they're only loaded with powder and weeds. I won't get hurt, Mother. I'll be careful, honest.
But she made him come away from the cannons. Two men took the long iron rods from the fire. Everybody was still, watching, standing as far behind the cannons as they could. The two men stretched out the rods and touched their red-hot tips to the touch holes. A little flame like a candle flame flickered up from the powder. The little flame stood there burning. Nobody breathed. Then, boom! The cannons leaped backward. The air was full of flying grass and weeds. Almanzo ran with all the other boys to feel the warm muzzles of the cannons. Everybody was exclaiming about what a loud noise they had made.
That's the noise that made the redcoats run, Mr. Paddock said to Father. Maybe, Father said, tugging his beard, but it was muskets that won the revolution, and don't forget it was axes and plows that made this country. That's so, come to think of it, Mr. Paddock said. Independence Day was over. The cannons had been fired, and there was nothing more to do but hitch up the horses and drive home to do the chores.
That night, when they were going to the house with milk, Almanzo asked Father,
Father, how was it axes and plows that made this country? Didn't we fight England for it?
We fought for independence, son, Father said. But all the land our forefathers had was a little strip of country, here between the mountains and the ocean. All the way from here west was Indian country, and Spanish and French and English country. It was farmers that took all that country and made it America.
How? Almanzo asked.
Well, son, the Spaniards were soldiers, and high and mighty gentlemen that only wanted gold. And the French were fur traders, wanting to make quick money. And England was busy fighting wars. But we were farmers, son. We wanted the land. It was farmers that went over the mountains and cleared the land, and settled it, and farmed it, and hung on to their farms. This country goes 3,000 miles west now.
It goes way out beyond Kansas and beyond the Great American Desert, over mountains bigger than these mountains, and down to the Pacific Ocean. It's the biggest country in the world, and it was farmers who took all that country and made it America, son. Don't you ever forget that.
Summertime. The sunshine was hotter now, and all the green things grew quickly. The corn thrust its rustling, narrow leaves waist high. Father plowed it again, and Royal and Almanzo hoed it again. Then the corn was laid by. It had gained so much advantage against the weeds that it could hold the field with no more help. The bushy rows of potatoes almost touched, and their white blossoms were like foam on the field. The oats rippled gray-green, and the wheat's thin heads were rough with young husks where the kernels would grow. The meadows were rosy purple with the blossoms that the bees loved best. Work was not so pressing now. Almanzo had time to weed the garden and to hoe the row of potato plants he was raising from seed. He had planted a few potato seeds just to see what they would do. And every morning he fed his pumpkin that he was growing for the county fair. Father had shown him how to raise a milk-fed pumpkin. They had picked out the best vine in the field and snipped off all the branches but one and all the yellow pumpkin blossoms but one. Then between the root and the wee green pumpkin, they carefully made a little slit on the underside of the vine. Under the slit, Almanzo made a hollow in the ground and set a bowl of milk in it. Then he put a candle wick in the milk, and the end of the candle wick he put carefully into the slit. Every day the pumpkin vine drank up the bowl full of milk through the candle wick, and the pumpkin was growing enormously. Already it was 3 times as big as any other pumpkin in the field. Almanzo had his little pig now, too. He had bought her with his $0.50, and she was so small that he fed her at first with a rag dipped in milk. But she soon learned to drink. He kept her in a pen in the shade, because young pigs grow best in the shade, and he fed her all she could eat. She was growing fast, too. So was Almanzo, but he was not growing fast enough. He drank all the milk he could hold, and at mealtimes he filled his plate so full that he could not eat it all. Father looked stern because he left food on his plate and asked, "What's the matter, son? Your eyes bigger than your stomach?" Then Almanzo tried to swallow a little more. He did not tell anyone he was trying to grow up faster so he could help break the colts. Every day Father took the 2-year-olds out, one by one, on a long rope, and trained them to start and to stop when he spoke. He trained them to wear bridles and harness and not to be afraid of anything. Pretty soon he would hitch each one up with a gentle old horse and teach it to pull a light cart behind it without being scared. But he wouldn't let Almanzo even go into the barnyard while he was training them. Almanzo was sure he wouldn't frighten them. He wouldn't teach them to jump or balk or try to run away. But Father wouldn't trust a 9-year-old. That year, Beauty had the prettiest colt Almanzo had ever seen. He had a perfect white star on his forehead, and Almanzo named him Starlight. He ran in the pasture with his mother, and once when Father was in town, Almanzo went into the pasture. Beauty lifted her head and watched him coming, and the little colt ran behind her. Almanzo stopped and stood perfectly still. After a while, Starlight peeked at him under Beauty's neck. Almanzo didn't move. Little by little, the colt stretched its neck toward Almanzo, looking at him with wondering, wide eyes. Beauty nuzzled his back and switched her tail. Then she took a step and bit off a clump of grass. Starlight stood trembling, looking at Almanzo. Beauty watched them both, chewing placidly. The colt made one step, then another. He was so near that Almanzo could almost have touched him, but he didn't. He didn't move. Starlight came a step nearer. Almanzo didn't even breathe. Suddenly, the colt turned and ran back to its mother. Almanzo heard Eliza Jane calling, "Manzo!" She had seen him. That night she told Father. Almanzo said he hadn't done a thing, honest he hadn't, but Father said, "Let me catch you fooling with that colt again and I'll tan your jacket. That's too good a colt to be spoiled. I won't have you teaching it tricks that I'll have to train out of it." The summer days were long and hot now, and Mother said this was good growing weather. But Almanzo felt that everything was growing but him. Day after day went by and nothing seemed to change. Almanzo weeded and hoed the garden. He helped mend the stone fences. He chopped wood and did the chores. In the hot afternoons when there wasn't much to do, he went swimming. Sometimes he woke in the morning and heard rain drumming on the roof. That meant he and Father might go fishing. He didn't dare speak to Father about fishing because it was wrong to waste time in idleness. Even on rainy days, there was plenty to do. Father might mend harness or sharpen tools or shave shingles. Silently, Almanzo ate breakfast, knowing that Father was struggling against temptation. He was afraid Father's conscience would win. "Well, what are you going to do today?" Mother would ask. Father might answer slowly, "I did lay out to cultivate the carrots and mend fence." "You can't do that in this rain." "No," Father would say. After breakfast, he would stand looking at the falling rain, till at last he would say, "Well, it's too wet to work outdoors. What say we go fishing, Almanzo?" Then Almanzo ran to get the hoe and the bait can, and he dug worms for bait. The rain drummed on his old straw hat. It ran down his arms and back, and the mud squeezed cool between his toes. He was already sopping wet when he and Father took their rods and went down across the pasture to Trout River. Nothing ever smelled so good as the rain on clover. Nothing ever felt so good as raindrops on Almanzo's face and the wet grass swishing around his legs. Nothing ever sounded so pleasant as the drops pattering on the bushes along Trout River and the rush of the water over the rocks. They stole quietly along the bank, not making a sound, and they dropped their hooks into the pool. Father stood under a hemlock tree, and Almanzo sat under a tent of cedar boughs and watched the raindrops dimpling the water. Suddenly, he saw a silver flash in the air. Father had hooked a trout. It slithered and gleamed through the falling rain as Father flipped it to the grassy bank. Almanzo jumped up and remembered just in time not to shout. Then he felt a tug at his line. The tip of his rod bent almost to the water, and he jerked it upward with all his might. A shimmering big fish came up on the end of his line. It struggled and slipped in his hands, but he got it off the hook. A beautiful speckled trout, even larger than Father's. He held it up for Father to see. Then he baited his hook and flung out his line again. Fish always bite well when raindrops are falling on the river. Father got another one. Then Almanzo got two. Then Father pulled out two more. And Almanzo got another one, even bigger than the first. In no time at all, they had two strings of good trout. Father admired Almanzo's, and Almanzo admired Father's, and they tramped home through the clover in the rain. They were so wet, they couldn't be wetter, and their skins were glowing warm. Out in the rain, by the chopping block at the woodpile, they cut off the heads of the fish, and they scraped off the silvery scales, and they cut the fish open and stripped out their insides. The big milk pan was full of trout, and Mother dipped them in cornmeal and fried them for dinner. "Now this afternoon, Almanzo can help me churn," said Mother. The cows were giving so much milk that churning must be done twice a week. Mother and the girls were tired of churning, and on rainy days, Almanzo had to do it. In the whitewashed cellar, the big wooden barrel churn stood on its wooden legs, half full of cream. Almanzo turned the handle, and the churn rocked. Inside it, the cream went chug, splash, chug, splash. Almanzo had to keep rocking the churn till the chugging broke the cream into grains of butter swimming in buttermilk. Then Almanzo drank a mug of acid, creamy buttermilk and ate cookies while Mother skimmed out the grainy butter and washed it in the round wooden butter bowl. She washed every bit of buttermilk out of it, then she salted it and packed the firm golden butter in her butter tubs. Fishing wasn't the only summer fun. Some July evening, Father would say, "All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Tomorrow, we'll go berrying." Almanzo didn't say anything, but inside he was all one joyful yell. Before dawn next day, they were all riding away in the lumber wagon, wearing their oldest clothes and taking pails and bushel baskets and a big picnic lunch. They drove far into the mountains near Lake Chateauguay, where the wild huckleberries and blueberries grew. The woods were full of other wagons and other families berrying. They laughed and sang, and all among the trees you could hear their talking. Every year they all met friends here that they didn't see any other time. But all of them were busily picking berries. They talked while they worked. The leafy low bushes covered the ground in open spaces among the trees. Blueback berries clustered thickly under the leaves, and there was a syrupy smell in the hot, still sunshine. Birds had come to feast in the berry patches. The air was aflutter with wings, and angry blue jays flew scolding at the heads of the pickers. Once two blue jays attacked Alice's sunbonnet, and Almanzo had to beat them off. And once he was picking by himself, and behind a cedar tree, he met a black bear. The bear was standing on his hind legs, stuffing berries into his mouth with both furry paws. Almanzo stood stock still, and so did the bear. Almanzo stared, and the bear stared back at him with little scared eyes above his motionless paws. Then the bear dropped on all fours and ran waddling away into the woods. At noon, the picnic baskets were opened by a spring, and all around in the cool shade, people ate and talked. Then they drank at the spring and went back to the berry patches. Early in the afternoon, the bushel baskets and all the pails were full, and Father drove home. They were all a little sleepy, soaked in sunshine and breathing the fruity smell of berries. For days, Mother and the girls made jellies and jams and preserves, and for every meal there was huckleberry pie or blueberry pudding. Then one evening at supper, Father said, "It's time Mother and I had a vacation. We're thinking of spending a week at Uncle Andrew's. Can you children take care of things and behave yourselves while we're gone?" "I'm sure Eliza Jane and Royal can look after the place for a week," Mother said, "with Alice and Almanzo to help them." Almanzo looked at Alice, and then they both looked at Eliza Jane. Then they all looked at Father and said, "Yes, Father." Keeping house. Uncle Andrew lived 10 miles away. For a week, Father and Mother were getting ready to go, and all the time they were thinking of things that must be done while they were away. Even when Mother was climbing into the buggy, she was talking. "Be sure to gather the eggs every night," she said, "and I depend on you, Eliza Jane, to take care of the churning. Don't salt the butter too much. Pack it in the small tub and be sure you cover it. And remember not to pick the beans and peas I'm saving for seed. Now you all be good while we're gone." She was tucking her hoops down between the seat and the dashboard. Father spread the lap robe. "And mind Eliza Jane. Be careful of fires. Don't you leave the house while there's a fire in the cook stove. And don't get scuffling with lighted candles, whatever you do. And Father tightened the reins and the horses started.
Don't eat all the sugar, Mother called back.
The buggy turned into the road. The horses began to trot rapidly, taking Father and Mother away. In a little while, the sound of the buggy wheels ceased. Father and Mother were gone. Nobody said anything. Even Eliza Jane looked a little scared. The house and the barns and the fields seemed very big and empty. For a whole week, Father and Mother would be 10 miles away. Suddenly, Almanzo threw his hat into the air and yelled. Alice hugged herself and cried, "What'll we do first?" They could do anything they liked. There was nobody to stop them. "We'll do the dishes and make the beds," Eliza Jane said, bossy. "Let's make ice cream," Royal shouted. Eliza Jane loved ice cream. She hesitated and said, "Well..." Almanzo ran after Royal to the ice house. They dug a block of ice out of the sawdust and put it in a grain sack. They laid the sack on the back porch and pounded it with hatchets till the ice was crushed. Alice came out to watch them while she whipped egg whites on a platter. She beat them with a fork till they were too stiff to slip when she tilted the platter. Eliza Jane measured milk and cream and dipped up sugar from the barrel in the pantry. It was not common maple sugar, but white sugar bought from the store. Mother used it only when company came. Eliza Jane dipped 6 cupfuls, then she smoothed the sugar that was left, and you would hardly have missed any. She made a big milk pail full of yellow custard. They set the pail in a tub and packed the snowy crushed ice around it with salt, and they covered it all with a blanket. Every few minutes they took off the blanket and uncovered the pail and stirred the freezing ice cream. When it was frozen, Alice brought saucers and spoons, and Almanzo brought out a cake and the butcher knife. He cut enormous pieces of cake, while Eliza Jane heaped the saucers. They could eat all the ice cream and cake they wanted to. No one would stop them. At noon, they had eaten the whole cake and almost all the ice cream. Eliza Jane said it was time to get dinner, but the others didn't want any dinner. Almanzo said, "All I want is a watermelon." Alice jumped up. "Goody! Let's go get one!" "Alice!" Eliza Jane cried. "You come right back here and do the breakfast dishes."
"I will," Alice called out. "When I come back!"
Alice and Almanzo went into the hot melon field where the melons lay round above their wilting flat leaves. Almanzo snapped his finger against the green rinds and listened. When a melon sounded ripe, it was ripe, and when it sounded green, it was green. But when Almanzo said a melon sounded ripe, Alice thought it sounded green. There wasn't really any way to know, though Almanzo was sure he knew more about melons than any girl. So in the end, they picked 6 of the biggest melons and they lugged them one by one to the ice house and put them on the damp, cold sawdust. Then Alice went to the house to do the dishes. Almanzo said he wasn't going to do anything. Maybe he'd go swimming. But as soon as Alice was out of sight, he skipped through the barns and stole into the pasture where the colts were. The pasture was big, and the sun was very hot. The air shimmered and wavered with heat, and little insects made a shrill sound. Bess and Beauty were lying down in the shade of a tree, and their little colt stood near them, wagging their small bushy tails and straddling a little on their long, gangling legs. The yearlings and the 2-year-olds and the 3-year-olds were grazing. All of them lifted their heads and stared at Almanzo. He went slowly toward them, holding out his hand. There wasn't anything in his hand, but they didn't know that. He didn't mean to do anything. He only wanted to get near enough to pet them. Starlight and the other little colt ran wobbling to their mothers, and Bess and Beauty lifted up their heads and looked, then laid them down again. The big colts all pricked up their ears. One big colt stepped toward Almanzo, then another. The six big colts were all coming. Almanzo wished he had brought carrots for them. They were so beautiful and free and big, tossing their manes and showing the whites of their eyes. The sunshine glistened on their strong, arched necks and on the muscles of their chests. Suddenly one of them said, "Whoosh!" One of them kicked. One of them squealed. And all at once their heads went up, their tails went up, and their hooves thundered on the ground. All their brown haunches and high black tails were turned to Almanzo. Like a thundering whirlwind, those six colts went around the tree, and Almanzo heard them behind him. He whirled around. He saw their pounding hooves and big chests coming straight at him. They were running too fast to stop. There wasn't time to get out of the way. Almanzo's eyes shut. He yelled, "Whoa!" The air and the ground shook. His eyes opened. He saw brown knees rising up in the air. A round belly and hind legs rushed overhead. Brown sides went by him like thunder. His hat flew off. He felt stunned. One of the three-year-olds had jumped over him. The colts were thundering down across the pasture, and Almanzo saw Royal coming. "Leave those colts be," Royal shouted. He came up and said that for a cent he'd give Almanzo a licking he'd remember. "You know better than to fool with those colts," Royal said. He took Almanzo by the ear. Almanzo trotted, but his ear was pulled all the way to the barns. He said he hadn't done anything. Royal wouldn't listen. "Let me catch you in that pasture again, and I'll whale the hide off you," Royal said. "I'll tell Father, too." Almanzo went away, rubbing his ear. He went down to Trout River and swam in the swimming hole till he felt better. But he thought it wasn't fair that he was the youngest in the family. That afternoon, the melons were cold, and Almanzo carried them to the grass under the balsam tree in the yard. Royal stuck the butcher knife into the dewy green rinds, and every melon was so ripe that the rinds cracked open. Almanzo and Alice and Eliza Jane and Royal bit deep into the juicy, cold slices, and they ate till they could eat no more. Almanzo pinched the sleek black seeds, popping them at Eliza Jane until she made him quit. Then he slowly ate the last slice of melon, and he said, "I'm going to fetch Lucy to eat up the rinds."
"You will not do any such thing," Eliza Jane said. "The idea! A dirty old pig in the front yard."
"She is not either a dirty old pig," said Almanzo. "Lucy's a little young clean pig, and pigs are the cleanest animals there are. You just ought to see the way Lucy keeps her bed clean, and turns it, and airs it, and makes it up every day. Horses won't do that, nor cows, nor sheep, nor anything."
"Pigs, I guess I know that. I guess I know as much about pigs as you do," Eliza Jane said.
"Then don't you call Lucy dirty. She's just as clean as you be."
"Well, Mother told you to obey me," Eliza Jane answered. "And I'm not going to waste melon rinds on any pig. I'm going to make watermelon rind preserves."
"I guess they're as much my rinds as they are yours," Almanzo began. But Royal got up and said, "Come along, Manzo. It's chore time." Almanzo said no more. But when the chores were done, he let Lucy out of her pen. The little pig was as white as a lamb, and she liked Almanzo. Her little curled tail quirked whenever she saw him. She followed him to the house, grunting happily, and she squealed for him at the door till Eliza Jane said she couldn't hear herself think. After supper, Almanzo took a plate of scraps and fed them to Lucy. He sat on the back steps and scratched her prickly back. Pigs enjoy that. In the kitchen, Eliza Jane and Royal were arguing about candy.
Royal wanted some, but Eliza Jane said that candy pulls were only for winter evenings. Royal said he didn't see why candy wouldn't be just as good in the summer. Almanzo thought so, too, and he went in and sided with Royal. Alice said she knew how to make candy. Eliza Jane wouldn't do it. But Alice mixed sugar and molasses and water and boiled them. Then she poured the candy on buttered platters and set it on the porch to cool. They rolled up their sleeves and buttered their hands ready to pull it, and Eliza Jane buttered her hands, too. All the time, Lucy was squealing for Almanzo. He went out to see if the candy